Good evening, and welcome to the January 2025 edition of Outbeat News in Depth. I'm Greg Moralia. Well, this last October, we reported on the 2024 Safe and Supportive Schools Report Card, produced by Equality California. Now, if you're not aware, Equality California is the nation's largest state-level LGBTQ plus civil rights organization. They surveyed 345 unified school districts statewide. So that means school districts that offer K through 12 education. And they asked them about how they're doing with a variety of LGBTQ issues. But only 146 of those districts responded and participated in the survey. The report does reveal, though, some real advancements and the persistent challenges faced by school districts in creating safe, inclusive environments for LGBTQ plus students, staff, and faculty. You might be aware that the Fair and Inclusive Education Act was passed and signed into law by Governor Brown back in 2011 and became effective in 2012. What we know is that the vast majority of school districts in California have yet to implement the requirements of this law. Tonight, we'll talk with staff members from Equality California about the report card and the status of the Fair and Inclusive Education Act. We'll also talk with them about what they're forecasting for the next 4 years under the new Trump administration. So stay with us. It's all coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, January 26th, 2025. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of January 26th, 2025. Last week, President Donald Trump was sworn in for his second term in a ceremony that reflected his signature mix of grandeur, exclusivity, and grievance. It was held inside the U.S. Capitol Rotunda for the first time since President Ronald Reagan's second inauguration back in 1985. The event broke with tradition and laid out an agenda steeped in divisive rhetoric, and for LGBTQ plus Americans, it contained some alarming statements. In one of the most jarring moments of his speech, Trump announced that, quote, as of today, it will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female, end quote, making it clear that his administration intends to strip federal recognition of non-binary and transgender identities. Trump also promised to reinstate service members who were discharged for refusing COVID-19 vaccines while vowing to eliminate what he called, quote, radical political theories and social experiments, end quote, in the military. Trump had said previously that he intends to reinstate a ban on transgender people's participation in the armed services. Trump claimed, quote, national unity is now returning to America, end quote, but his rhetoric leaned heavily on exclusion. He did invoke Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy, promising to fulfill King's dream, yet dismissed systemic inequities with calls for a, quote, colorblind and merit-based society, end quote. Trump declared January 20th as Liberation Day for American citizens, framing his presidency as a moment of national redemption. He proposed renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the, quote, Gulf of America, and reclaiming the Panama Canal, calling its transfer to Panama, quote, a foolish gift that should never have been made, end quote. He also pledged to, quote, plant the stars and stripes on planet Mars, end quote, which drew cheers from Elon Musk, whose company is so deeply tied to America's space ambitions. And in other news, a police captain in Washington, D.C. is suing the Washington Metro Police Department for demoting him after he was the first gay officer to take family leave after the birth of his child. A lawsuit filed by Captain Paul Hebernack, who served as director of the D.C. Metro Police Department's School Safety Division, claims his reassignment to a less desirable position after his return from parental leave was, quote, humiliating and viewed as punishment and a demotion, end quote. The lawsuit maintains police officials violated the U.S. Family and Medical Leave Act, the D.C. Family Medical Leave Act, and the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause by their actions described as, quote, willful and in bad faith, end quote. Hebernack joined the force in July of 2007 and served with distinction as an officer and later a captain. After receiving outstanding reviews and promotions, he was promoted to captain in November of 2020 and assigned to that school safety division work. And here in California, LGBTQ advocates are criticizing the state and its health officials for a sudden cancellation of an LGBTQ mental health initiative, just as their alarms are growing about the negative impact queer young people may face from the second term of the Trump administration. There are an estimated 1.1 million LGBTQ youth in the Golden State between the ages of 13 and 25, with numerous studies showing that they are at higher risk for anxiety, depression, and suicide compared to their heterosexual peers. To address and reduce the unique stigmas faced by LGBTQ plus youth, state health officials had awarded a $3 million plus contract to an LGBTQ-owned consulting firm last year to develop a campaign to roll out statewide, and it was expected to debut this coming spring in cities across California. But according to an email sent out on January 15th by the California LGBTQ Health and Human Services Network, the California Department of Health canceled the contract without an explanation. And finally, as our nation witnessed the start of Donald Trump's second term in office, ironically happening on Martin Luther King Day, I'm reminded of a quote from King himself 4 years after his iconic I Have a Dream speech. He said, quote, "I must confess that that dream I had that day has at many points turned into a nightmare. Now, I'm not one to lose hope. I keep on hoping. I still have faith in the future. But I've had to analyze many things over the last few years, and I would say over the last few months. I've gone through a lot of soul-searching and agonizing moments, and I've come to see that we have many more difficulties ahead, and some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism. And I think the realistic fact is that we still have a long, long way to go." End quote. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia. But I don't know what to do. Tonight we're talking about the 2024 Safe and Supportive Schools Report Card, published by Equality California, our nation's largest statewide LGBTQ plus civil rights organization. Now, they surveyed 345 unified school districts statewide, but only 146 of those districts completed their survey and responded, which leaves the question, what are the rest of these districts doing? According to Equality California, the report reveals both advancements made and the persistent challenges faced by school districts in creating a safe, inclusive environment for LGBTQ plus students, staff, and faculty. My guests tonight are Jules Goff, the program manager, and Jorge Reyes Salinas, the communications director, both from Equality California. Jules and Jorge, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Before we get into the questions and talking about the report card and kind of the state of the union here for schools in California, it's been a long time since we've had anybody from Equality California on the show, and I'm really excited to have you both here. But for our listeners who are not familiar with you as individuals, let's start with that. Jules, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for Equality California and maybe your passion for what drives you to do this work.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Jules Goff. My pronouns are he, him, and they, them. And I'm the program manager for our Safe and Supportive Schools program. I got into this work after doing my master's degree in sexual and reproductive health. I found Equality California through an AmeriCorps internship, actually. And so I had a background in education and combined that with a passion for sexual and reproductive health. And that's kind of how I ended up here.
Awesome. Jorge, how about you?
Yeah, I came to Equality California from the Capitol. So I worked as a communications director for Senator Monique Limon. And, you know, as being part of the LGBTQ community, identifying as a gay man, the LGBTQ plus area was one that I had not fully worked in yet. So once I heard about Equality California looking for a communications director, made some conversations and applied for the position. But it truly has been a full circle experience, not only as being a gay man, but also being a DACA recipient. So all the combinations of the work we do does not just highlight the LGBTQ plus community, but all the communities in which an LGBTQ plus person belongs to, right? So it's very crucial during this time, especially as we're entering this new Trump administration.
Boy, you're not kidding. And for our listeners who may not be familiar with Equality California, generally speaking, before we get talking about all the school stuff, Jorge, can you tell us a little bit about the organization, maybe a little bit about its evolution, but what its mission is today?
Absolutely. So Equality California brings the voices of LGBTQ plus people and allies to institutions of power in our state and across the United States. So not just California's borders. Our mission is to create a world that is healthy, just, and fully equal for all LGBTQ plus people. And we advance civil rights and social justice by inspiring, advocating, and mobilizing through our advocacy and our tireless movement on behalf of those who we serve. And like I mentioned, it's really important to highlight the intersectionality of the work we do. It's not just about the LGBTQ plus identity, but also all the communities that belong to that person.
And I understand you're based in Los Angeles, but you also have an office in Washington, D.C., yes?
Yes, we are. We have our headquarters in Los Angeles, and we have office in DC. We have staff in Sacramento, and we have staff in San Francisco and also in the Central Valley.
Excellent. And our listeners may be familiar with the Human Rights Campaign. How do you interface with them?
They are some of our partners. HRC has been one of our partners as alongside other organizations, big and small, specifically now working alongside very strongly with our transgender organizations like Trans Latina Coalition, for example, in Los Angeles. But we work hand in hand. We are in coalitions fighting against legislation that is very discriminatory or pushing legislation that is going to advance the lives of LGBTQ plus Americans. So especially now more than ever, it's really a collective effort between all the organizations and putting all of our work together and fighting this fighting the fight ahead.
Yeah. Well, and I want to come back to that after we talk about schools for sure, because I really think there's a lot that our listeners need to be involved in, aware of, and support around what's coming in this next 4 years. But let's go back to 2012. And in California here, we enacted the Fair and Inclusive Education Act. And I guess one of the things that I've always found frustrating about this is that we still have so far to go with really implementing this into our schools. But for our listeners who don't know or have never heard about it, Jules, can you talk about what the Fair and Inclusive Education Act is and what it's supposed to do?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Fair and Inclusive Education Act, or SB 48, was signed into law by Governor Brown in 2011. And it mandates that California public schools teach about the contributions of LGBTQ plus people and communities in social studies curriculum, starting in K-12 education. So it specifically requires that LGBTQ plus historical figures, events, and issues be integrated into subjects like history and social studies. So the aim of this law is to provide a more accurate, diverse, and inclusive education that reflects on the contributions of LGBTQ plus people in society and fosters understanding and acceptance in our schools.
And it impacted the standards, right? The things that are required by teachers to teach in classrooms. If my memory serves me right, it's
Correct.
grades 2, 4, 5, 8, and 11. So it's spread out over sort of the K-12 experience, right?
Exactly.
And so we haven't really fully implemented it yet. What's going on here?
Yeah, and so that is correct. It spans across K-12, and unfortunately, even though the Fair and Inclusive Education Act became law in 2012, our 2024 Safe and Supportive Schools report card highlights those significant gaps across the state. Only 37% of the school districts that we surveyed have fully adopted the instructional materials that comply with the law and those new standards. And in addition to that, there's a lack of consistent training for the educators, which of course leaves there to be more gaps in that education actually being implemented, those instructional materials being implemented. So, despite this law that has really clear goals, a lot of schools have not yet made the steps they need, that made the changes they need to represent LGBTQ plus students in the classrooms.
So what do you think is standing in the way? What are the obstacles?
There are a few key obstacles. One of the major obstacles for more inclusive education is a lack of updated textbooks that represent and reflect the LGBTQ plus community's contributions. So back in 2012, when the FAIR Act was introduced, the compliant textbooks just didn't exist, right? And manufacturers had to develop entirely new materials, which took more than 5 years to complete. It's not an easy process, right, to redevelop and update all of these textbooks. And given the high cost of the textbooks, a lot of districts are still waiting for the funds to update their resources, especially since some of them may have updated their textbooks before these inclusive materials were even available.
I do remember a conversation about the textbooks. And of course, the textbooks, I think, generally can be challenging for districts with competing political interests, social interests, parents, and all of that. And I remember some of the criticism of those who don't believe or support in the Fair and Inclusive Education Act that we were going to be teaching kids to be gay in schools. Can you talk a little bit more about the content that a parent might expect to find in a textbook that is inclusive?
It's a great question. And the topics that would be covered are the same as those that would be covered in any other context in history, right? Things like social movements, things like individuals that have done great things, like scientists that scientist happens to, let's say, be gay or be trans. These materials just require, or the FAIR Act requires that there are materials that just acknowledge the existence of these people that of the LGBTQ plus community and the actual contributions that they've made, in the same way that you would do for any other important figure that we want to highlight the contributions that they've made to our society.
Mm-hmm. And I know in some of the lower grades, the standards include a requirement to talk about gender, kind of the history of gender roles, families and family structures. We're not teaching people to be gay, are we?
No, definitely not.
But these are important conversations, right? As we talk about different types of families, there are all kinds of families that exist in schools. Some of those are same-sex couples, men and women, but there are single-parent families, there are interracial families, there are all kinds of different family combinations that children need to be aware of. And so it strikes me as odd that the critics get so inflamed by, you know, this idea that we're exposing children to the idea that there are same-sex parents out there. So I became aware of the latest schools report, which is what caused me to reach out to you. This is the 2024 Safe Schools Report Card. Give us a little bit of history of what this report card is, how long you've been measuring it, and some of the metrics that you use to evaluate how we're doing in California.
Yeah, so the Safe and Supportive Schools report card and the survey that goes along with it was developed and first put out in 2019. So there have been three iterations of this survey so far. And in those iterations, we've focused on California Education Code and policies that are expected to be implemented statewide. And we've used that along with some of the key best practices that have been found from, you know, research on what helps kids feel supported, such as the implementation of GSAs in school districts. And so we took state law and a little bit of those best practices and developed a survey that asks on the district level what districts are doing and how they are implementing these laws. So we're asking about what the policies look like. Mm-hmm. And what is happening, again, on a district-wide level. So we're looking at this, like, overview of a district as a whole.
So I know in Sonoma County there are several dozen school districts, a lot of small school districts. Does your survey include all school districts in California?
No. So our survey is of unified school districts, which are districts that go K to 12. This is are the way that it was originally designed. We were taking into account laws that it made the most sense to do K to 12, and that covers 345 of the school districts in California that we reached out to and offered the survey. And there are 938 districts total. So as you can see, we're looking at a specific subset of the school district.
Okay, so a third or so of the districts were included in the survey. Now, how many of those?
Well, actually, sorry, just to make sure we have the correct numbers.
Yes, thank you.
We sent out the 345 surveys to the school districts that are public, right? And 146 responded to that survey. So unfortunately, we still did not get the full 345.
Got it. And that's exactly the next question I was going to ask you is what type of participation did you get? Did you get any feedback from the districts who didn't respond, or you have any idea about why they just didn't bother?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. So of those, we have the 145 districts, as Jorge said, that did respond. And a lot of districts gave reasons, including capacity. So some of these districts are very small and may be lacking certain staff. So it was difficult for them to take this survey. That was one reason. There are other districts where there has been highly politicized issues, especially with certain boards, that when we have districts that they're not sure how the public will receive them taking the survey, we've had those districts let us know that they're not interested for that reason.
Got it.
Right. And I think Jules does a very great job, and their program team, at maintaining those relationships and those conversations, so for them to keep going. But, you know, I will be the bad cop here. But it is unfortunate, to be quite honest. It is unfortunate to have, for example, LAUSD, one of the largest districts that serves an insane amount of students who also belong to the LGBTQ plus community, not have any kind of representation in this important survey and understanding what the obstacles are to achieve full equality in schools. So we definitely understand that there are school districts that don't have that capacity, but even then we see school districts that are understaffed submitting this survey because they understand the importance behind it. And they know that our survey is not about bringing the school districts down, but trying to analyze and observe what are the obstacles, what is getting in between to giving a queer student, an LGBTQ plus student, the resources they need to thrive while they're getting their education.
Mm-hmm. So give me an idea what some of the elements are that you ask about in the survey. I can't imagine that it would be so time consuming that a district would say, gosh, we just don't have the manpower to do this.
That is a great question. And we have, over the years, cut down the survey significantly from the last iteration was 89 questions. This one was 34. So we've made it as approachable and accessible as we can. Mm-hmm. And we estimate it only takes about 2 hours to get it done. And so, yeah, I agree with you there. And so as far as what the report measures, we are measuring LGBTQ plus inclusion in curriculum. That includes recognition of events like Pride Month and Harvey Milk Day. Mm-hmm. We're including accessibility of gender neutral bathrooms for students, LGBTQ plus specific training and professional development, anti-discrimination policies that protect LGBTQ plus students and staff from bullying and harassment, the implementation of the inclusive materials that align with both the Fair and Inclusive Education Act and the California Healthy Youth Act, as well as support for LGBTQ plus and allied staff, which includes policies, affinity groups, and other.
Okay, so it's a pretty comprehensive look at everything sort of LGBT related to schools.
Exactly.
Which is great. And you said, yeah, you quoted that 37% were in compliance?
Yes, with the FAIR Act.
So of the school districts that bothered to respond, oh, a little over a third are actually in compliance with the Fair and Inclusive Education Act. That doesn't seem like a very good score.
I would agree with you there. Yeah, it shows that there is a significant gap between where we are now and full implementation of the FAIR Act.
And so the FAIR Act is one element of this, right? I know that the mm-hmm. California has a number of requirements and has for a number of years for school employees, teachers to receive some LGBT awareness training. Let's just sort of lump it all into that category.
Yeah.
Also, no, law enforcement does too. I do a lot of work with law enforcement in trying to train them. But I also know that in California, the vast majority of California law enforcement agencies have not complied with the law that requires LGBT awareness training. What's your sense about how schools are doing, at least with the training component for employees? Do you have any sense about, is that moving anywhere, or is it down there at that 37% level?
So we do have some information here. So the lack of consistent LGBTQ plus training for educators is a huge issue. From our survey, 46% of the responding districts require at least 1 hour of LGBTQ plus specific training every 2 years. And if we compare that to the law you were just talking about, which is AB5, that that law mandates 1 hour every year. And so we see that 46% of districts are getting only 1 hour every 2 years. So there is still this big gap for sure.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's surprising, but we do have a course for change that is being worked on right now. And so as a part of AB5, which is a bill sponsored by Equality California, there was the development of these PRISM cultural competency trainings. These trainings have been developed by us, the LA County Office of Education, the CDE, and a number of other groups, and it'll be available asynchronously to all certificated staff across California. So one thing that's really awesome about this training that'll be available in 2025 is that it's going to help fill the gaps in less resourced regions where LGBTQ plus training isn't happening.
Fantastic. So as you look at a map of the state of California and the data you gathered in the survey, I have to imagine that there are some regions of California who participated in the survey that came out looking better than others. Where are we doing well, and where in the state are we not doing well?
There are honestly a lot of really mixed results. And quite frankly, every district has room for improvement in different ways. And we've found that whether it's geographically, by the size of the district, their budget, the diversity of staff and students, all of these things play a role in shaping what each district's needs and priorities are going to be, and therefore the gaps that they have. And so what we've seen is that, like, regardless of a district's ranking or status or geographical region, it's essential for them to do the survey and give us this information that allows us to understand where that assistance is actually needed, more on a district to district level. It also helps us identify critical conversations we need to have with elected officials, right, to secure statewide support that for the things that we see as gaps as a whole across the state. And so focusing there, really.
Great. So with respect to our local region here, let's talk about Marin, Sonoma County, and Napa County. How many districts reported, and how did they do?
So the participation from these counties, we have zero responses from Napa County and Marin, and only three responses from Sonoma County. And so to give credit to those districts that did participate, and we're happy that they did, we have Cloverdale Unified, Cotati-Bronert Park Unified, and Geyserville Unified in Sonoma County.
Well, good for at least those three districts. Hopefully we'll get more participation moving forward. Well, we're going to take a quick music break, but stay with us. We'll be right back with more with Equality California.
Someone says that so. Something
And that was the incredible Cynthia Erivo with Defying Gravity from the soundtrack of Wicked, a movie you definitely need to see. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat News in Depth here on KRCB Radio. I am Greg Moralia, and we're talking with Jules Goff and Jorge Reyes Salinas from Equality California about the status of LGBTQ issues in schools and now about what's next to come. Let's shift a bit and talk about legislation. We've seen a wave of legislation passed across the United States that have done everything from ban books and access to books about LGBT topics for students. We've seen a variety of facilities bans that prohibit transgender students from accessing restrooms and locker rooms and changing facilities based on their gender identity. But California seems to have quite a few protections in place. Can you kind of give us a sense of how we stand out from the other states in terms of these protections?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one big one that we've been hearing a lot about last year, even towards the beginning of this year, was the Safety Act, which came from the forced outing policies waves that we've seen across school boards in California, where school board members were deciding that outing a transgender non-binary student to their parents was the right thing to do, apparently, and when it's not, when it creates more danger and removes safety from the student and the lack of privacy. So AB 1955, which is the Safety Act in California and signed by Governor Newsom last July, strengthens existing laws against schools' policies that forcibly out students. It also provides critical resources to parents and families of the LGBTQ plus students as they work towards acceptance on their own terms and their own time. And it also protects educators who face retaliation actions from administrators and school boards because of creating inclusive school environments, which is what we were seeing across the school boards that were antagonizing transgender and non-binary students.
Well, and
speaking of restrooms, if you want me to go into that, I can, but I don't want to bore the listeners with legislation. But we do have two crucial bills last year: SB 760 by Senator Newman and AB 1266. But SB 760 addressed school facilities and mandated that all gender restrooms ensure access to safe gender-neutral bathrooms, and it also offered strong protections against discrimination based on gender identity.
So what, if I understand what you're saying right, is that this is legislation that would prohibit a district from saying you can only use a restroom based on your sex assigned at birth.
Correct. Yes. It addresses, it rejects those local school board policies and ensures that a transgender student, non-binary student, gets to use the restroom they choose and they feel the most comfortable with. Mm-hmm.
And I know we've reported on a couple of districts who've been trying to sort of buck these state laws. I think there was a district, the Chino Valley School District, if I'm not mistaken, and Orange County also had a story in the news about how they tried to rescind a local LGBT policy, both pretty conservative areas of the state. But our state stepped in, the Attorney General stepped in and tried to or threatened to sue those districts, right?
Absolutely. The Attorney General, which we worked closely with it to express our concerns and the danger that these policies were causing, was very proactive and continues to be very proactive when it comes to ensuring that this go into the court system, to the legal battle, because unfortunately, that's what these school board districts are trying to do. And even with the Safety Act, even with this bill that protects that goes against the forced outing policies, Chino Valley continues to introduce policies in their school board meetings to try to bring this back when it's now proven to be against the law. So they keep trying to find loopholes, wasting taxpayers' money in the school district because of the legal fees that they're going through, and continue to underrepresent their students.
And just so our listeners understand, a lot of this is coming from elected school board members, not from teachers or school staff necessarily. Is that true?
Correct. That's correct. It's coming from school board members who ran on a hateful platform, who are designing and trying to follow DC politics and go after transgender individuals, transgender youth, transgender families, to try to get some name, 15 minutes of fame, and sway people with lies to try to win an election.
Crazy. So Equality California has been involved in supporting legislation, all types of LGBT related protective legislation for many, many years. I know I worked with your staff when we did the law enforcement training requirement back in 2018. As you assess where we are, I mean, we do have a lot of good things in place, laws in place anyway, that protect a variety of LGBT issues. What work still needs to be done? What's missing to really insulate our community from violence, discrimination, harassment, equality?
While California has made, great strides in protecting LGBTQ plus students and educators, the reality is that we still need stronger enforcements of existing laws. And whether that's closing loopholes, increasing implementation, increasing funding to be allowed to implement correctly legislation that was put in place years ago, that's what's crucial. Like we've mentioned, and Jules did a great job at explaining the obstacles of having the Fair and Inclusive Education Act be implemented across all school districts, right? And again, not just about LGBTQ plus curriculum. Of course, we're talking about this in this space, but we're talking about Native American, we're talking about Chicano, we're talking about African American, so ADA, right? So there is more than just the LGBTQ plus community in this Fair and Inclusive Education Act that needs to be fully implemented and hopefully throughout the next 5 to 10 years, right? And there also needs to be a greater emphasis on ensuring that all schools, including rural or conservative areas, create more of or create finally environments that are truly inclusive for LGBTQ plus students and specifically transgender students and their staff and their faculty as well. So it's really now coming more about safety and reporting and understanding what are the gaps, because we can have all this great policy, but where is the implementation?
And the accountability piece, you bring up a really crucial point that's been on my mind for a while, is that, we can say and brag about all of these different laws that we have passed and put in place, but if nobody is holding school districts, law enforcement agencies, whoever it happens to be, if they're not being held accountable, then these laws really don't have a whole lot of meaning. What role is Equality California playing in terms of that accountability piece? I know the report card is certainly an important tool. What other kinds of things do you think you're doing that are holding people accountable?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, like you mentioned, the report is a huge tool, right? And that is why, as a communications director, I have to ensure that message is out there, that if you do get this survey in the next year, when we start pulling data for the next one, and you work for a school district, that you take the time, because that is how we're literally hearing where these gaps of implementation are for multiple aspects that not just focus on LGBTQ plus students, but again, the FAIR Act as a whole. With other accountability aspects, we again really rely a lot on our partners, our coalitions, to ensure to let us know what is happening on the ground, what are they facing with legal services, with name identification, with anything else that they encounter through in California that is creating obstacle for them. And maintaining those relationships we have with our legislators is super important, especially our executive officers, right? Like the Attorney General, Secretary of State, et cetera, to ensure that the implementation goes hand in hand with the legislation.
Well, and we have a legislature that's now made up of about 12% LGBTQ plus
Correct.
members.
Yes.
How important is it that LGBT people run for office? And in this current legislature, how important is it to have that representation?
It is extremely important. It's representation matters, and we will say this every day. Representation matters, and it makes a big difference. And not only are we seeing an increase of representation this year, but we also have people from the LGBTQ caucus, leaders from the LGBTQ caucus, hold positions of leadership in both chambers, right? So that's very important to see that it's not you're just not only now in the room where it happens, but you're leading the conversation. You're the point of the table. So it's important to have that and continue to increase that. And that's why Equality California has these training programs to ensure that LGBTQ plus people feel supported and get their questions answered if they want to run for office. We have four pipeline programs. Like, we have an internship for high school students, then we have a fellowship for college students, then we have our Leadership Academy, which we invite LGBTQ plus community leaders who want to participate in government to learn and hear from LGBTQ plus elected officials on how to run, what is at stake for them, what is the time commitment, right? Even just to give some words of inspiration for them to get the courage to submit that, running application. And then we have our Leadership Summit, which is when we invite all these elected officials or appointed officials who are LGBTQ plus do a 2 days of training and conversations and sharing of best practices. So Equality California does a really solid foundation of having these pipeline programs.
That's amazing. Let's shift a little bit and talk about this new presidential administration that has landed. I know a lot of our listeners are really pretty terrified. I have friends who have talked about, making plans to leave the country and move. They're really afraid. What's your assessment of the risks to us?
It's a very scary time. It's a very alarming time to go back to a pres administration that has not been in favor of basically every minority that is part of the United States. And now knowing more than last time that the transgender community is their main target. So I would say that, here in California, we are very lucky and fortunate that over the past several years, California has enacted strong laws to protect LGBTQ plus people from the damaging effects of a second Trump administration. But the fear is still there. The uncertainty is still there. So that's something that we cannot, like if we could, we could help other people to not feel this, but we know that it's present, and we know that's, once January 20th comes, that unfortunate feeling of uncertainty may continue in the lives of many LGBTQ plus Californians and Americans.
Sure. What protections are in place? I mean, you talked about intersectionality, which I think is really an important piece. And I know a lot of my college students are really afraid of, ICE coming in and separating their family or deporting them, as well. Are people overreacting? Should they be fearful? What's your sense about that?
Well, when it comes to the immigration questions, and I'm not an immigration legal expert, but of course, I think what we're addressing for everybody is that, you never know what to expect under a Trump administration, but we do know what to expect under the administration of Governor Newsom, of Attorney General Bonta, and the people that have had our backs when we were facing the last Trump administration. So I would say that it is a scary time. Always take your precautions. Always know what your rights are, whether that's connecting with an immigration resource center like CHRLA or your local community center. That will be helpful to know any immigration questions. When it comes to the transgender community, reaching out to your LGBTQ plus center in your community, or reaching out to us, Equality California, so we can connect you with people in your area that can provide some legal questions or services, or even any health related questions. So it is important to be alert. It is important to also know that this is the time to speak up and to also fight back for any kind of injustice that we're facing. Our slogan this year for Equality California is "The gloves are off," and not in a aggressive way, but more of like the gloves are off us, and we're not going to tolerate you taking away our rights any longer. We're not going to be hiding in the shadows, whether you're undocumented, transgender, gay, bisexual, that we're not gonna remain silent. This is not another 4 years of remaining silent or playing a safe card. We're not doing that. And I'm proud of Equality California for taking that stance and ensuring that we're not holding back when it comes to protecting our basic human rights.
And I think that's really an important strategy. I mean, you can't put your head in the sand and just hope that nothing happens over the next 4 years. You do need to be alert and you need to be prepared to fight. Let's talk about marriage equality for a bit, because I think we did something really important this last November. As other states have considered this, there have been a lot of conversation and worry about the U.S. Supreme Court overturning the Obergefell decision, which perhaps could lead to some compromise of that court order that protected marriage equality in California. But we successfully put a safeguard in place around that when we removed the language from Proposition 8 from California's Constitution. For our listeners who may not be familiar with that, can you talk a little bit about what that did and how that has protected marriage equality in our state?
Yeah, with now, which this last November was Proposition 3, which enshrined marriage equality as part of the California Constitution, as well as interracial marriages as part of the California Constitution, and it got rid of Prop 8. Now, same-sex marriage and interracial marriages are part and recognized under the California Constitution, so it cannot be taken away, and it's a right that every California gets to enjoy. And like you mentioned, Proposition 8, which a lot of people didn't know, was part of the California Constitution. It was just a zombie language that was not active, but in 2008, voters did place it in there. So this November, we're glad to see it removed. We are, you know, in the middle of all these uncertainties from the election, this was a victory that we're really happy that Californians shifted. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but what's really important to point out here is that the increase of support on same-sex marriage in the election results was something that is rarely seen. It was, I believe, over a 30% difference from the Prop 8 numbers. So when was the last time you've seen election results like that shift people's minds, right? In those X amount of years. So it's really important to highlight that the progress that we're making in California is true and is present, and stories really do change hearts and minds. And the more that people speak up, the more people hear them who are around them, and the more people change their perspective about someone or someone's identity because they now have a real person sharing their authentic selves with them.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, that shift is there, and that's something that we should be very proud of as Californians.
Yeah, I think it was 62%+ of the voters voted in support of marriage equality. And also, I think it's important to point out, this language also enshrined protection for interracial marriage, which, you know, my young students can't even believe at one point in this country that you couldn't marry someone of a different race, but that was the case. And so we've put that protection in place as well, which is just crucial. So during this 4-year presidential run, we are going to also elect a new governor in California. And, you know, Governor Newsom has been extremely supportive of the LGBT community. I think I would consider him to be one of our legislative heroes for sure. I mean, if you just talked about marriage, he was one of the ones who really got the ball rolling with the legal battle around marriage equality. But talk about what we need to do to make sure that we keep a governor in place who is going to be one of our allies.
Number one thing is to vote, to show up. I think now more than ever, we really need the LGBTQ plus community to do what we did this past November, but even triple it, right? Because the LGBTQ plus community did show up to the polls this past election. So we need to make sure that during the midterm election, that doesn't fizzle out, that we continue to fight just as hard to ensure that candidates are speaking about the issues that are affecting us the most, not just the issues, not just speak to us in a private setting or in forums, but have them debate the lives of transgender people and have them talk about their opinions loud and clear for the audiences to watch. And that's what we need to press them. We need to make sure that the LGBTQ plus conversations and topics are being talked about during these debates, whether they're full-on left-leaning Democrats, right? Or far-right conservatives, like they need to be talking about how to address these issues and fears and concerns.
Hmm. And there's going to be a pretty wide field of folks, I would imagine, that are going to run because
Yes.
Governor Newsom is not eligible for re-election, and so there will be a number of Democrats, Republicans, and other parties, I'm sure, that are going to step up. And so, what's the best way to make a good decision, do you think?
Well, in addition to, of course, staying informed and, understanding the candidates, Equality California will be releasing our endorsements as the endorsement process moves forward. We always have all of our websites updated with who we trust and believe is the best candidate for specific seats, and that will include the governor's seat as well. So our website is eqca.org, and there's an elections tab as well for people to hear about what elections are coming up in their area and our chosen candidates to that we see best fit.
Great. So you're kind of doing some of the homework for us.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Making it easier for people to read about the ones that we believe are the best fit.
Great. So as we wrap up here, what's Equality California's call to action for our listeners? I mean, you mentioned the gloves off approach, but what's a call to action for our listeners?
Our call to action is very simple. Get involved. Get involved, stay informed, and advocate as and share your story. And the uncertainty that we're gonna be facing or we're currently facing, many people are, is real, and it's important to recognize that, but it's also important to understand that the LGBTQ plus community has fought through things and thrived from things like this before. Not that we deserve to have to do it again, but as a community, we are resilient, and the fight and the community power is stronger, and it has been proven to be stronger. So it's important to not lose hope, to not treat this as doomsday, but really as a reshift of now we are on a different side of now we're on defense, and we are ensuring that we're not silent. And that's really what's the most important thing here, because when we become silent, when we let other people speak for us, is when things move faster and they start becoming out of our control because people don't think we exist or care. So our voices are more stronger than ever.
I love it. Get involved. And one of the things that you can do if you don't want to get out there and picket and run for office is you can support the work of Equality California. You all depend upon donations from our community and from supporters. Tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about your organization and how to support it.
Yes, absolutely. Please, yes, we run on donations, and to learn more about Equality California, to support our work, as small as it can be, is going to eqca.org, and you'll see how to donate, how to get involved, how to become a volunteer, what events we have coming up if you want to attend, or if you want to help us run with the event, and you get to enjoy the event as well. And also even more fun things that are coming to celebrate our identity, like Pride, for example. We have Pride events coming up. So it's not just about fighting back and donating, but also being in community.
Fantastic. Well, we've been talking with Jules Goff, who's the program manager, and Jorge Reyes Salinas, the communications director from Equality California. Thank you both for your time today, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so
Thank
much,
you.
Greg. Appreciate it.
And that wraps up our hour. Be sure to tune in next week for Outbeat Radio's Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greer. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia. Our shows are available for on-demand play anytime on our website at outbeatnews.com and on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now on iHeartRadio. Find links to subscribe at outbeatnews.com.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what. So I give it up to you. Oh.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it 1,000 times again. And I'll rise up, high like the waves. I'll rise up, in spite of the ache. I'll rise up, and I'll do it 1,000 times again. With you, with you, with you, with you. The silence is quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet. Move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I do it 1,000.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. The Jazz Hot is next.